I'm switching on, yeah? Okay, this one's on. Good morning, Rabbi Sai. Our limud of Sefer Chofetz Chaim is as a schus refuah for Yosef Dov Ben Chayla, Hishtav Refuah Shleva Bekorev, Besoy Shor Choyli Yisrael. So, in speaking Loshon Hara L'Tayeles, the example that we were giving in the Chofetz Chaim was somebody who knows that the Shidduch is heading for disaster. He thinks it's an unsuitable shidduch, and he wants to prevent the shidduch from happening. And he's thought about it very carefully, says the Chofetz Chaim, and he's sure that the things that are wrong with the shidduch are wrong. He's thought it through very carefully. He's thought through the consequences of what happens if the shidduch, what happens if he tries to prevent the shidduch and the person's not going to listen to him. And therefore he'll have spoken Loshon Hara and nothing will come from it. So it won't be a toyeles. All these things he has to think through. Tonight number four, says the Chofetz Chaim, is that supposing you think, again, the example of a shidduch, but we said any association between two people, a business partnership, whatever it is, but let's take a shidduch. I know that a certain shidduch is about to happen, or there's somebody, there's a chosn and a kala interested in each other, the parents are interested, etc. They'd like the shidduch to go ahead, and I know that the shidduch is unsuitable for three reasons. Now, reason number one is because the girl has some sort of a genetic disease. A reason number two is because the girl's father is a gunner. A reason number three is because the girl's brother went off the derech and he's in Gansan Amuma Lahachis, let's say. So I know that there are three reasons why I think this girl is unsuitable, why the shidduch is unsuitable. If it happens, it'll be inappropriate and it'll end up in disaster. Says the Chofetz Chaim, I'm still mechuyev, although now I have a hetzer, to tell Loshon Hara L'Tayeles, to tell Rechilus L'Tayeles, in order to prevent people, Al Sloisamad Adam Riecho, to prevent people from not falling into a bad situation. Afal Pikein, says the Chofetz Chaim, I have a duty to minimize the amount of Loshon Hara that I tell. So, he says, for instance, so supposing that I am a very, very choshev Rebbe. Yeah, this person, I'm the Exa Rebbe, yeah, I'm the Torahway Rebbe, and this person's a Torahway Chosid. And if I tell him, look, I don't want to tell you any reasons, I don't want to go into any discussions, do not do this shidduch. Or he phones me up and he says, do you think this is a suitable shidduch? And I say to him, no. Yeah, then if by him, he will be mekabel, and he'll accept, okay, in that case, I won't. If you say, don't do the shidduch, I won't do the shidduch, then I've got no heter to tell him about the inyonim of Loshon Hara, that the brother went off the derech, that the father's a kanuf, that the girl has in other words, and again, if all it needs is that I have to tell him just one thing, if I tell him that I know for a fact that the girl has a genetic disease, yeah, let's say, and there's some reason why for that should prevent the shidduch, then I don't have to tell him, in addition, the other reasons why I'm against the shidduch. I don't have to tell him that the father's a ganav. I don't have to tell him that there's a brother who went off the derech, whatever it is. In other words, says the Chofetz Chaim, it's not a blanket heter. You have a heter loisamad adam reecho to speak rechilus as necessary to prevent people from coming to harm. But it's not a blanket heter to just tell everything. You have to minimize it and only tell what's absolutely necessary for the tachlis.
Started the Torahway, Northwest London, Friday, Kof Dalet Tevez, 24th of January. Rabbi Nachum Selaznik Shlita, Freedom of Speech. This week's Torah was sponsored as Kosh Kosh Lehm Lechol, for the Yisrael was Kosh. Hashavoy Moa Chayrem, and Chomash Shachzul, for Tehem, the Shalom Bin Hero.
It's a pleasure to be here. Many of you may know me as the local optometrist, and may be wondering why I'm standing here. So a very, 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 very brief sikkum of how it came to be that I speak about Shmiras HaLashon. I moved to Eretz Yisrael in 2006. I joined a kollel. I had an amazing chavrusa. I would fly back to work here. I had an amazing chavrusa who, after a few years, essentially said to me that we're going to learn Hilchus Lashon Hara Be'ian for the next year, and I said, no, it's not for me, let's do something regular, like Hilchos Shabbos, Kashrus, Tavsa Mishpocha, the normal stuff. He said, no, he looked at me straight in my eyes, and he said, no, Menachem, you need to learn Hilchos Lashon Hara V'Iyun. And what he was very gently and kindly saying to me was that unfortunately, at the time, I didn't have any control over my mouth. And he, although I didn't want to do it, he told me that he was going to leave me as a chavrusan if I agreed to learn this with him. I then spent 2 years learning the topic of Lashon Hara Be'Iyun, of Hilchos Lashon Hara Be'Iyun. And during that time, I improved. You can't learn something every single day without it beginning to have some sort of effect on you. After that, we moved on to other topics, and I found myself starting to slip again. So I went back to my chavrusa, Yossi. I said to him, what am I supposed to do now? And he told me that you have to start teaching and writing on the topic. And Baruch Hashem, I've spent the last 10 years writing and teaching in different seminaries. I just produced a sefer called Words Change Worlds, which it was a collection of things that I've written. So I want to share with you a profound idea that I found as I was going through the learning that really, really changed my perspective on everything to do with Shmuas HaLashon. You know, we have the Americans have something called the First Amendment to the Constitution. It's called within it is incorporated the concept of freedom of speech, that you have the right to say anything about anybody and anything as long as you do not incite to violence, which is a little bit unusual. Do not incite violence. Which is unusual because you probably grew up with a similar phrase to me in school. It went something like this, sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me. But deep down, we know that that is not the true phrase. Really, what it should be is sticks and stones may break my bones, but I'm young and they will heal quickly. But words will put me in therapy forever. That is the truth for many of us that we are aware of, that words can actually be way, way more harmful. And therefore, it's interesting that
you would have to accuse somebody else of being violent, in which case that would attract violence against him.
You're asking a halachic question or a Western world question? What did they say? I don't know, you have to...
American free speech.
Yes?
You said you could accuse anybody of anything. Can you accuse them of being violent? In which case, that would attract violence against them.
I don't know, you have to ask the American lawyers. I don't know. I'm not at the top of that. I can tell you what Halakha says, which we'll talk about soon, maybe. So we understand that there's something not quite right there. That speaking about anybody, as long as you don't cause physical harm, there's something missing. Let's see what the Jewish perspective is on the concept of freedom of speech. So in last week's parasha, we know that Moshe goes out. He sees the Mitzri hitting the Jew. He kills the Mitzri to save the Jew. The next day he comes out again, and he sees two Jews fighting. And he tries to get them to stop, and one of them says to them, you're going to kill us like you killed the Egyptian. And then the Pasuk says, Vayira Moshe, Vayomer Achein Noida Adava. Moshe was scared. He was worried. And he said, now the matter is known. Rashi brings two famous pshatim. The simple pshat is that, look, people are talking about this. I didn't realize I was seen when I killed the Egyptian. Now what's going to happen is they're going to report it to Paro, and then I'm going to get into trouble. Paro already knows that maybe I want to take over from him. Right? He's already looking for any sort of mutiny, rebellion. So, you know, I'm going to get into trouble. Simple pshat. Then Rashi brings the deeper pshat from the Medrash that... I could never understand, why is it that the Yidden are suffering so much? Why do they have to be in slavery? Look at all of these other nations. Why is our nation constantly vilified and attacked? Constantly, throughout the ages. Why is that? But now I know. Now I can see that the Yidden are willing to walk around saying Lashon Hara. Now I understand why they should be in Golos. Something to... consider after the year and a half that we've been through. Just something to bear in mind. But the question is, what is it about Lashon Hara that creates this slavery? Why do people who speak Lashon Hara find themselves stuck in Golos? So the Maharal says something. He explains, I mean, we see throughout... Sorry.
Yes? What actually was Lashon Hara? Just to say Moshe killed the Egyptian.
It was clear that people... The fact that these two people... The way I understand it, the fact that these two people were talking Lashon Hara that was, knew about this means that this must have been the gossip of the town. But everybody had been talking about, oh, did you hear, he did this and that. So what's wrong with that? There's nothing intrinsically wrong with that, because saving a Jew from an Egyptian is a wonderful thing to do. But there could be damage that comes from it. There could also be, perhaps they would look down upon him, he's going to cause us more trouble. So there's lots of subtle aspects to there. But you're right, it's not a blatant Lashon Hara. We're actually going to talk about subtle Lashon Hara in a minute. We have in the Haggadah, we have these two streams, right? We start with Gnus from Messiah Mishvach, but in two different ways. We talk about the physical slavery, how they were physically enslaved, and then they became free. And then we also talk about the spiritual slavery, how we started from over the Avodah Zorah, and now we come close to serving Hashem, okay? There were both of these slaveries going on in Mitzrayim. We know that they were on the 49th level of Tumah, whatever that means, or close to being unsavable. Chazal say that they were doing the big three, all as part of Avodah Zorah. The way Avodah Zorah was served there was with Shvichas Domim and Gila Arois. That is, so they did all three together. They were essentially the same as the Mitzrayim, as the Malachim say at Kriyas Yamsuf. These ones are over there, Avodah Zorah. These ones are over there, Avodah Zorah. Why are you saving some and why are you saving these ones and killing these ones? There was hardly any difference between them. They were completely enslaved, both in the physical and in the spiritual. Maral explains that somebody who is enslaved, the only way that they will get out of slavery is if they have a deep desire to exit that slavery. They have to want deep inside themselves to get out of this container, this restriction. And one of the things that Moshe was seeing here was something very, very interesting. When a person lives within the physical world, those are their dreams. The physical world is their dreams. They will never, ever, ever escape slavery. They will always be enslaved. This is what the Maharal explains. The best way I can explain this is if you think about the Olympics. There's people are always trying to break more records. The high jump, the pole vaulter. They're always trying to... But there's always that thing, even when they're greatest and they've achieved, there's always that thing that, I'm not that. I'm here, I've managed to achieve this record, but I can't reach there. Or you have money, you live in the world of money, I've got all of this money, but I haven't got that. Or achievement, or fame. Or perhaps our deepest desire, for many people, attention. I have this attention, and that attention, and this attention, but... Why isn't that person looking at me? Why haven't I grabbed that person's focus? Why aren't they looking at me? What does that say about me? Moshe knew that in order for them to get out of slavery, it wasn't just that they had to have a desire to get out of the physical slavery. They had to want to live in a spiritual world unbounded. And the best way I can demonstrate this concept is through an actual Be'er Ma'ariv Chaim, where the Chofetz Chaim discusses a particular type of case. I see that you have a 5-minute Hilchos Lashon Hara shir every morning, which is a wonderful thing, but you're near the end, so let's rewind to much, much, much earlier. The Chofetz Chaim, essentially, if you'll excuse my wording, the way I say it, describes two different types of derogatory comments. He describes something called an objective derogatory comment, which means you say this person went against the Torah. Then it actually matters less what you think about it. The reality is you're saying that this person did something that Hashem views as bad. That itself is Lashon Hara. But then there's other things that are much, much more subtle. What I would call subjectively derogatory statements. Okay? Things where the Torah doesn't comment. The Torah does not say whether or not a person is good to be beautiful or ugly. Rich or poor. High IQ, low IQ. The Torah doesn't comment about any of these things. More than that, there are certain things that the Torah actually says are good. And yet there are people who view that as bad. So this has got nothing to do with the Torah's view of good and bad anymore. It's to do with people. The example the Chofetz Chaim gives is a Baal Teshuvah. Now Baal Teshuvah, when the Chofetz Chaim talks about it, it doesn't mean somebody who grew up not religious and became religious. That's not what the Chofetz Chaim is talking about. He's talking about somebody who was religious, did something wrong, and now went through the process of tshuva. What do we call that? What does the Torah call that? What's that called? It's a mitzvah. It's a mitzvah in the Torah to do teshuvah. So if you come along and say, that person over there is about to shiver in this inyan, in this particular area, what are you saying? You're saying this person did a mitzvah. As far as the Torah is concerned, you have said something positive about that person. However, unfortunately, we know that there are people who look down on Balei Teshuva. They can't get over the fact that they actually made the journey and then came back in that particular area. Says the Chofetz Chaim, because of that, you cannot say that person's about to shiver because you don't know how it's going to be taken. Even if you mean it positively, how's it going to be taken? The Chofetz Chaim essentially gives us four conditions if you would like to be able to say a subjectively derogatory statement, something that's not intrinsically a negative, but something that people view negatively. Number one, the speaker must not view it negatively. Number two, the listener must also not view it negatively. You better make sure that the listener is on board with you, that this is a positive thing rather than a negative, or at least neutral. The third thing, which he doesn't say in this particular Be'er Ma'ayim Chaim, he says elsewhere, is that obviously you're not allowed to, there's a separate halacha called Megaleh Soid, you're not allowed to reveal somebody's secrets. And therefore, if this is the type of thing that a person doesn't want other people talking about, the person themselves, you cannot mention it. And the final condition, he says, is this. He says that the listener needs to be a chacham tzanua. What does a chacham tzanua mean? Well, let's break it down. The word chacham, wise, we know that Chazal tell us, Ezu chacham, haraya es hanoilad. Somebody who can see what will be born, understands that there are repercussions to their actions. So a chacham is somebody who gets the fact that when I do something, it could cause something else. What's tsanua? Well, tsnius is one of the very, very difficult things to translate. But if I could give the most basic, the basic ikari concept of what tsnius is, it's this. I have enough understanding of my own self-worth that I do not need to broadcast, show off, to get your attention. So then you'll say, oh, wow, Menachem, that's amazing. You're so amazing. And then I start to feel good about myself. That is the most basic underlying concept of tznius. Have enough intrinsic self-worth. What does that mean, intrinsic self-worth? It means I understand that I am a divinely created creature who's created perfectly, the way exactly the way Hashem wants, with all of my positive sides and all of my challenges, so that I am perfectly designed to fulfill my divinely created purpose in this world. And to walk around, that's not arrogance. Arrogance is, I'm so much better than you, look, you know, who are you? That's not arrogance. This is solid self-esteem. In order to achieve anything great in this world, a person needs to have solid self-esteem, which means to understand they have been created with everything they need to fulfill Hashem's purpose, their purpose from Hashem in this world. When a person is sanua, they don't need to broadcast because they don't need to get attention. The word need is the important word that people often leave out when they're explaining what sneers is. I don't need it. We need, says the Chofetz Chaim, we need the listener here to be a chacham sanua. Why? Because although it may not be derogatory, and it could be that everybody who hears about this will not think less about the person. However, the reality is, even though it's not derogatory, it could cause harm if it spreads. It could be that the person who is a Baal Teshuva doesn't want, it may not be a secret, but they don't want the whole world talking about it. And if it spreads, it will make them feel uncomfortable. Okay, it could be that they may lose a job because of it. There could be lots of damage. And there's another side to Lashon Hara, apart from the derogatory side, and that is that you're not allowed to say Lashon Hara, that anything about the person, even if it's not derogatory, if it could cause them harm, physical, financial, or emotional suffering. And therefore, I need the listener, if I'm going to tell the listener, he doesn't think it's bad, but I also need him to be a chacham tzanua. He needs to be wise enough to understand that if I spread this on further, it could end up causing harm. And he needs to be tzanua. That means he doesn't desperately need to use everything that he has to his advantage to get attention. Because otherwise, even though he knows it could cause damage, he may not be able to hold it in. Now, we all know people like this. They're often the people who are in the center of attention, that right, they oh, come and listen. I've got the latest story for you. Come and gather around. When you see that, don't be angry with them. You should actually feel a little bit sorry for them. They're desperate. They need, they're empty inside, and they're trying to fill themselves up with this attention from somebody else. If you can fulfill all of these four, so then it's not derogatory, it's not a secret, and it's not going to end up causing damage. Well, that's a wonderful thing. Then you can say it. You can compliment a person. Say this person achieved this great thing or made a change in their life. Again, if you can fulfill all those things. Now, why do I mention this? Because this concept, the Chofetz Chaim understood the deep psychology of people. This concept of tznius, which essentially is based on solid self-esteem, is probably one of the biggest drives to speak Lashon Hara. The opposite, the lack of, the low self-esteem. The Chofetz Chaim mentions that there are 7 triggers to speak Lashon Hara. There are probably others as well, some that maybe didn't apply in his time. One of them he talks about is gaiva, arrogance. But when he describes arrogance, he actually describes it in 2 different ways. First of all, he describes it in the way that we would generally understand that term. Oh, look at me, I'm so great. And the other one is actually the way he says it is this. He says, there are times when that person's getting all the attention. And you think to yourself, were he not here, everybody would be looking at me. So you say whatever, find whatever stories you can to push him down so that you get the attention back on yourself. We, modern psychology, would call that low self-esteem. This desperate need for attention. What happened was Moshe saw that these people were walking around talking about him. Okay? That this was the latest. And suddenly you realize these people are enslaved to attention. They are enslaved. They need to have the latest stories. They need to be the one who walks around saying, look at me, I've got the stories. I know. This is such an important thing to understand. Once Moshe understood this, he realized, we're not going to get anywhere. We see, by the way, the Zohar, which I haven't read, but everybody quotes it, the Zohar says that there was a golus of Dibur in Mitzrayim. It wasn't just the people who were enslaved. Speech itself was also enslaved. Now that's difficult to understand. What does it mean that speech was enslaved? We see people speaking. People are speaking all the time in the story. So what does that mean? So based on what we've understood now, we can explain the following. Speech is supposed to be a connection. Right, Rabbi Tatz, in one of his Sforim quotes, his Rebbe with Moshe Shapira, is saying that the mouth is the organ of connection. It's supposed to connect people together by speaking nicely to each other, building people. And it's also supposed to connect us to Hashem through tefillah, through Torah learning. When we use that very, very organ that's supposed to be connecting us with other people, and instead to make a break or to make it internalizing, like, look at me, to try and get other people's attention, to break connections so that I can be self-serving, so then I've completely, completely misused my mouth. When the Zohar says that golus, there was a golus of Dibur, what it means is this. It means they weren't capable. They were so caught up in their neediness within the physical world, within the emotional world, within the need for attention, that they were not capable of using their speech in a spiritual way. That's what it means. Their speech itself was enslaved. And we see this in a few different ways, actually. I think it's Rav Tzadok says that after they leave Mitzrayim, the first place they get to is Pihachiros. Pihachiros. Rav Tzadok says those same letters could be read as Pihacheros, or freedom of speech. Their speech was enslaved, and now, finally, when they leave, they have freedom of speech. So what is freedom of speech to us? Essentially, it's this. The Western world understands there's a concept called rights. I have the rights to this and I have the rights to that. I have the right to be able to sing whatever I like. That's what the Western world says. And do you know what? Some good things have come from such a situation. I think when you're managing a society, you need to think about rights. But the Torah basically does not talk about rights anywhere. The Torah doesn't really mention the concept of rights. Everything the Torah talks about is actually responsibility. The Torah doesn't say, he has the right to this. The Torah says, you have the responsibility to that. So freedom of speech means this. It means the freedom to be able to use your mouth for what it was actually created to be, rather than feel enslaved to have to get that attention. Now, I have to say that for me, when I look at the seven things that the Chofetz Chaim talks about, I would say that this aspect was the biggest strife for me. I needed attention. I needed attention. So I went to ask a Rav, like, how do you deal with it? How do you build on self-esteem? What are you supposed to do? So I'll tell you what he said. He said to me that you should choose one good thing to do every single day. Tiny, tiny good thing to do every single day. Whether a mitzvah or a davar Torah, whatever. Tiny. You do it every single day and you never, ever, 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 ever tell anybody. You don't tell your wife. You don't tell your kids. You don't tell your parents. Why? Because tznius really exists on three different levels. Unfortunately, the way tznius is talked about in the world in general is only about clothing. Clothing perhaps matters less to men, perhaps. But we also see from many Gemaras that tznius exists in status and in mitzvahs. When a person is walking around boasting about what he's done and what he's achieved, and it's coming from a needy place inside, there's a problem there. There's something lacking there. And when a person is boasting about the mitzvahs that they've done, it may look like they're doing lots of good things. They are doing lots of good things. But why do you need that? Why do you need it? Why are you enslaved? So he said to me, this is what you should do. Choose one tiny, tiny, tiny thing that you do every single day, that you will do every single day, and never tell anybody. Not your parents, not your kids, not your wife, no, not your best friend. And you'll die after 120. And nobody will know you did it. More than that, they won't even say it in the Hesped. In other words, they won't even find out after you died. And then, oh, wow. I can't believe I never knew this. Oh, he was really such a tzaddik. And if the Rav said to me, if you start doing this, you may find that at first this is a nightmare. Because you haven't learnt to value yourself intrinsically. You'll find it impossible. Until you say something. Until you actually tell somebody and then they say, wow, that's so amazing. You actually don't value yourself. So you desperately need to tell somebody. But if you fight that and you hold back from it, then you'll see that your internal world starts opening and you become a little bit less enslaved. I'll give you an example. This is a made-up example which I'll act out for you, okay? This is what people do because most of us don't go around boasting. Why don't we go around boasting? Because we know that when we boast, we actually get the wrong type of attention, okay? People don't like a boaster. So we have refined it to an unbelievable level. Listen, I'll act it out to you. Listen to this. Oh, I've got to tell you what happened on the bus the other day. Yeah, I was on the way to the hospital when I... Oh, yeah, no, Baruch Hashem, I'm fine. Anyway, I was on the bus and there... Oh, why was I going to the hospital? It doesn't matter. Anyway, I was on the bus and it... Oh, gosh, you really must know. Okay, I'll tell you. I go and play music to the sick kids in hospital. But let's go back to the bus to talk about... Do you see? Now, if the hospital really was irrelevant, why did I say the words? If I'm trying to tell you a story about what happened on the bus, why did I slip that word? And by the way, it's often subconscious. It's often subconscious just because I need that attention. And then you think, wow, Menachem Selesnik, not only Not only does he go and play music for the sick kids in hospital, which, by the way, I don't. I wish I did, but I don't. Not only does he do that, but he's humble with it. This is our disease, as Rabbi Twersky has written many, many, many books on. This is the disease of the generation nowadays. Why is it? I don't know whether it's at Hollywood or Photoshop and magazines or post-Holocaust. Or I don't know why it is. He doesn't even explain why it is. We don't understand why it is. But the reality is that this is our deepest drive. Just want to end because I've got 4 minutes left. I just want to connect it to this week's Parsha. One of the other things that the Chofetz Chaim says is a big drive. The Chofetz Chaim has an acronym for his seven triggers to speak Lashon Hara, the seven things that make people say Lashon Hara. It's Kol Gehenim, all the hell. So it's very easy to remember, okay? The first one, the kaf is ka'as, anger. There are many people who speak Lashon Hara because they're angry with somebody or they want to take revenge on somebody. So in this week's Parsha, when it comes to the frog, every Seder night, the frog in our home, the Seder night is a big multimedia presentation. The best, the most we can do without being mechalal Yom Tov. So we have frogs jumping around, not real plastic frogs jumping around everywhere. And my kids wait every single year for the story of the frog. You know the story of the frog, because the pasuk says, "Vatal hatzvadeya," the frog came up. And then later we find out that there are Svadi'im, the plural. So the famous Medrash, there was one big frog, they hit it, and it split into two, and they carried it every time they hit it. And my kids rolling around laughing. This is hilarious, right? What idiots! They're mad! What are they doing? Hitting the frog! They're beating the frog! Did you not learn the first time, or at least the second time, that you're only making it worse for yourself? You see, here's the problem. If you've grown up from, and you learn these midrashim as a kid, sometimes you forget to review these stories as an adult. The reason why we have these stories is not so that we look down on Paro, not so we look down on the Mitzriim, not so we look down on other people. It's so that we find the Mitzri inside ourselves. That's what the Bali Musa say. We hear about Lavan, so we can see what it looks like to trick with money. We learn about Paro, so we can see what it looks like to be arrogant. We learn about Haman, who is the ultimate low self-esteem person. If you read the psukim there, you can see it. So that we can learn about low self-esteem. And we learn about the Mitzrim so that we can see the Mitzri inside ourselves. Do you know how often I see people angry in fighting and arguments because this person cheated them out of a lot of money? And I agree, it is a lot of money. But can you not see that every time you hit that frog, it just splits into an even bigger plague? Can you not see how it is affecting your heart? Can you not see all of the expenses this is going to lead to? Can you not see how it's breaking up your family? Can you not see any of that? We all walk around beating frogs. That's what we do. So, on conclusion, just a very, very quick summary of what we've said today. When a person is enslaved, they cannot get out. They will only get out if they have a deep desire to get out. They had a deep desire to get out of the physical slavery, but unfortunately they were caught on the almost the lowest level of tumah. They were caught in this desperate need for physical expansion. And unfortunately you can never ever have complete freedom with the physical world because you're always limited. You're always stuck. Okay? And one of their deepest needs in the physical world was the need for attention, and that is why they walked around with the latest stories. And when Moshe Rabbeinu saw that, he saw that they were not ready to get out. They were entrapped. And if they're entrapped with the most important thing, their mouth, which is what's supposed to connect them to Hashem and to other people, if even in that organ they were so, so enslaved without any real desire to change, they're not going to get out. So, I hope we can all take that message. For me, when I stand up, it's a very, very weird thing for me to stand up and talk about this. If you had somebody standing up and talking about Hilchos Shabbos, who said that, listen, you know, we'll grow slowly. I still break Shabbos, but, you know, slowly, slowly, right? You'd laugh at that person. That person shouldn't be standing there. Unfortunately, all of us, including myself, are still working and fighting on this is a constant growth. Every single tiny step we can take in this should bring the Geula closer.
Right, okay. There is... a question that faced Paroi, that when Klal Yisrael was supposed to leave, or let's say that they were a nation that were to receive the Torah at Har Sinai, this was the Tana which Moshe Rabbeinu kept on mentioning, Bo Yitziachu Esu Om Tavden Esu Lukim Al Horazeh. So essentially what Moshe Rabbeinu is telling Paroi is that you should reckon that this nation are destined for great heights, and therefore you are holding them back. And Paroi looks towards Moshe and he says, you know, it's perhaps some sort of farcical imagination on your part, because essentially this nation are idol worshippers. And when you're going to reach the edge of the water, then the Maluchim are going to shout out, Haluli Oivda Avoyda Zura, Valuli Oivda Avoyda Zura. And the Mekadrigim are going to say there's no great distinction between the two of them. Because essentially, why should you drown the Egyptians and save the Jews? And these are the people that you want to take out from Mitzrayim because you say they are a lofty nation. They are an elevated nation. They're a nation which are going to one day be mekabel the Torah. It doesn't hold up. Doesn't hold water. Forgive the pun. And therefore, Moshe says, yeah, it's true. They have indeed dropped and descended to the Memtes Sharetim, to the 49th degree, to a place where they have to be taken out immediately, because if they weren't, Chas V'Shulam, they would never be able to leave Mitzrayim. The Abturuf says that this is very, very, how do you say, powerfully conveyed in the message which Moshe Rabbeinu came to Paroi. And he didn't, wasn't for nothing that he threw in front of him this stick. And he said, Kaches matru v'hashleches, throw it down in front of Paroi v'hi l'sanen. And that was the message which Moshe Rabbeinu wanted to point out to Paroi. When this stick, this staff, which is essentially a matei elikim, it is a stick which has got an intrinsic sanctity. Tzach HaDash Bacha was written on it. It was handed down from the Mauritian through the Duras. A very precious stick. A very godly stick. It was called in the Torah Matei Elikim. But when it's thrown down in front of Paroi, it turns into a writhing serpent, which is poisonous. And there's a reason, because it depends whose proximity you are within. Because Moshe takes this snake and he holds it by the tail, again it returns to become a Matei Elikim. And therefore it depends who it is and which company it's keeping. If the Matei Elikim is in the hands of Moshe, it retains its status. The moment that it's thrown down in front of Paroi and is there in front of the Mekor HaTimeh, the Avi Avos HaTimeh, Li Oiri, and I am essentially the deity, I am myself a god, then that very same stick can become a Nuchosh Maimis. And when I take it back away from Paroi, it becomes again the Matei Elikim. And Memaile, that was the message which Moshe Rabbeinu was saying. The only reason that Klal Yisrael are in this matzav where you can point to them and say Haluli Oivda Voidazura, Haluli Oivda Voidazura, is because they are in the milieu, the vicinity, and in the influence of Mitzrayim. And Mitzrayim is bringing them down to descend to a matzav where they are mamish bememtes sharetim. And when they will be released from this spiritual cesspool, they will go up towards
Har Sinai, and in a period of 49 days, they will elevate themselves to a place where they were able to say Na'ase v'nishma to the Rabbeinu Shloilom and to be mekabel the Torah. And that is why Moshe Rabbeinu used specifically this medium of the snake by the instruction of the Rabbeinu Shloilom to tell them that that's where they need to be removed from. They need to be removed from Mitzrayim in order to reach those heights. There was in Moscow many, many years ago, in the time of the KGB, a Ruv who had to darshan on the night of Kol Nidre. And he spoke to his Kehillah, and he knew that amongst the people who were there in the big shul, this place is teeming with KGB agents, just waiting to catch him on one word that he could say, which would incriminate him having spoken against the Kremlin and having spoken against the authorities. And this Ruv, facing his oilem on the night of Yom Kodesh, thinking, what can I say that should be kosher and I should be able to get the message across? And then the Rebbein Shalom sent him Siyata Deshmaya, and he sent to the oilem who were listening with thirsty eyes. Two neighbors came to me for Adin Torah, and all they wanted to know was a chicken. Who does the chicken belong to? Reuven said, it's mine. Shimon said, it's mine. And they couldn't define who's the owner. All I said to them was, the chicken has its legs tied. Let one stand on the right side and the other on the left side. Untie the chicken. Let him loose and see in which direction the chicken is going to go. And lo and behold, they untied the leg, and the chicken walked straight to Reuven in no time. So the Reuven turns to his Kehillah and he says, Unu b'choyach gedilas yemincho tate tziriru. With your greatness, we ask of you, Rebbein Shloilem, Onu, please, b'choyach, tate tziriru, open up those shackles, release Klal Yisrael, and then you'll see that the Yidden will walk towards you. It'll be a b'china of Moshchayni acharecho noritzu, and the Yidden know who the real master is, and they will gravitate towards him when you just release those shackles. And that was the message for his community, who were already in tears on the night of Yom Kodesh when they realized that they are under the jackboot of the communists, but given the chance, they know who their real master is. Shabbos.
Something was